so much pain and suffering. I just kind of freeze up. But that being said, I still have to know, so...
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Dawson's Creek. Today's episode is Season 4, Episode 22, The Graduate. And now here are your hosts,
Tara Aranio and Sarah D. Bunting.
Elaine!
Hi, Tara.
Hi. You wish that's what we were talking about. We're not.
Oh my God. I really do. The future is plastics. Hello, listeners. Just a quick note before we get into this really exhausting episode about our cousin podcast, Again With This. Episode 264 will be dropping this Friday, November 21st. Let's watch James Eckhouse in Jack and Bobby. Yes, that's the sort of Kennedy prequel from the WB. I had no idea James Eckhouse was in it. I don't know what awaits us, but it is close to the anniversary of a certain assassination. So that's what we're going to be talking about, and you can find it on YouTube.
Indeed. We are going to be off from the main show next Monday, November 24th, for the week of Thanksgiving, but... that day, we will be bringing two episodes out from behind the Patreon paywall.
And we went with a hybrid Here Comes Winter, Here Comes Thanksgiving pairing.
We did.
We will start with Again With This 217. Let's watch Emma Caulfield Ford in a Thanksgiving episode of Buffy the Vampire Slayer. And then we are keeping it brisk with episode 223. Let's watch Alyssa Milano and Cameron Bancroft in To Brave Alaska.
That Friday, November 28th, it's going to be Again With This 265. Let's watch Wayne Tippett in Mad About You. That is season 1, episode 11, Met Someone. You can find that on Hulu. We'll link it in our show notes.
And then everything returns to what passes for normal around here on Monday, December 1st, mm-hmm. with the season 4 finale, or as the WB announcer used to say, finale, mm-hmm. of Dawson's Creek.
I also forgot, in the middle of all that, Thursday, November 27th, is going to be the last Again With Them of 2025. We are off after that, so it's going to be a supersized mega them when we return in January. But yes, November 27th, our final reckoning in this calendar year with Jenny and Tori's terrible podcast and Amy's completely nonsensical interjections. That is, of course, a benefit for our club members at the $5 level and up. And again, all of that is at againwiththispodcast.com/club. Join us. It's fun. Yeah,
please do. We are thankful for your support all the time, but especially at this time of year. And you should be thankful that we listen to 902 and OMG and not you. Do not do it. Let us do it.
Indeed. Let's start this episode with our B plot. Drew is the latest boy resident at Evelyn Ryan's teen boarding house, while the last one takes big steps. We open this storyline with Jack and Toby weirdly washing Jack's car outside Toby's house. What the fuck? It's not where the car lives.
No. And also, I understand why we haven't seen Toby's family to mm-hmm. date. That's all fine. But like, how old exactly is Toby? And are they really expecting us to believe that there are two high schools on the Cape when we are about to see the graduation of Capeside High, which mm-hmm. is like log cabin schoolhouse shit size? Like,
yeah,
I don't understand Toby's existence.
Right. Yeah, I don't know where he lives. Like, we saw Jen just, like, pop over to pull off the gambit of making him accept Jack's non-invitation to prom. So presumably right. it's close, and she can drive, I think. But yeah, no right. idea where this is. Or the other thing being, if Toby was ahead of Jack in school, Jack would have known, oh yeah, the other gay kid at our school, you know?
Yeah.
Anyway.
I mean, they clearly don't go to school together. I just right. don't understand. Like, does he stand in a charger when he doesn't have a plot?
Yep.
I mean, I don't care. He gets wet in the scene and he is cute. So let's enjoy.
Anyway, that's what they're doing when Toby tries to define the relationship. Jack says he thinks he's been very clear about what they are to each other. Toby says they're dating, and Jack waves his assent without looking at Toby, as you can see in the visual aids. And Toby's like, that would make me your... And then also has to say boyfriend, since Jack doesn't. In fact, Toby claims Jack goes out of his way not to say it and wonders how that's supposed to make him feel. Jack claims he's gonna say it when it's appropriate. When Toby presses him, Jack asks Toby to let him surprise Toby, and then they return to being vague with Toby's worry that a she isn't going to like him. But wherever that was going to go, it doesn't, due to the breakout of a literal hose fight that we cut away from before anyone gets, I'll say, interestingly wet. Wet, certainly. Wet enough for me? No. Then it's the middle of the night. Drew is knocking on Jen's second story window. And yes, he is very tall, but not so tall that he doesn't need a ladder to do that. Jen taunts him for a while before letting him in, whereupon he tells her he had a big fight with Mrs. Valentine over the usual, his reportedly awful yet extremely off-screen father. And by the way, while Jen is closing the window, her shirt rides up and you can see Michelle Williams' tattoos on her hip and her lower back.
Uh-huh.
Because that was the style at the time, and I'm pretty sure the one on the back is a Japanese kanji, which I hope she has covered with something less embarrassing or just straight up had removed, because, girl,
Yeah, well, we were all young once.
True. This time, the issue with Valentine's is that Mr. V is not coming to graduation, and Mrs. V decided to blame Drew for it, since Mr. V blamed Drew's bad behavior and Drew blamed Mrs. V's bitchiness. Could be neither of you, and Mr. V just doesn't want to go because grads are boring, see previous episode. But anyway, Jen figures Drew needs a place to crash and lets him stay for one night on the floor, but she tousles his hair before he goes, and that is very cute and in the visual aids.
That little, like, brrr, smile that he does, like, I don't understand why they're trying to, like, the redemption of Valentine now. It's, like, much too late to have started this, and spoiler, he's kind of out after this season. The actor is now a gallerist along the Philadelphia main line, so I may have to pop in to the gallery, but I don't know. They could have done something with this guy that they didn't do, and then they started to realize that, and then it was too late.
Yeah, it's a shame.
Yeah.
Over to the tiny regional airport somewhere as Jack runs Toby to Andy's gate because the September 11th attacks haven't happened yet and they can still do that. Jack explains, as he somehow didn't on the drive over, that Andy will have booked her seat months in advance so she could be the first one off the plane. Of course she did. And sure enough, she emerges just as Jack gets inside. And considering she's probably been on three different planes to get here from Italy, she looks fresh as a daisy as she hugs Jack and makes sure he's going to take her to at least one kick-ass graduation party. And then, clip two.
Oh, I'm sorry. I don't believe we've met.
Andy, Toby. Toby, Andy.
Nice to meet you.
Me too. He's told me volumes about you.
Oh. I'm sorry. I don't mean to be rude, but how do you know Jack?
Toby's my boyfriend.
He did it. Oh my God. This is great. Oh, I can't believe you didn't email me, you big sneak.
I'm sorry. It's just kind of recent.
It's not that recent. It's not too recent for email.
Yeah, I can't believe you didn't email her either. Her delighted response is exactly correct. If your brother appears with David Monahan and is like, this is my boyfriend, you're like, oh my God, 10 up top. And that's exactly what she does.
So cute.
In hug form. I missed her. I didn't realize, but yeah, I'm glad she's back.
Then Jen is getting home to see Drew and Grams chatting over tea at the kitchen table. Alarmed, Jen calls Grams outside to say she told Drew he could stay one night because she felt sorry for him. Graham says that after Jen left for school, Grams and Drew had a good talk about his home life, and Graham said he could stay for one more night for a price. Don't worry, of course, Graham says she recognizes Drew for the smooth-talking butt-kisser he is, but since they sold the house, they're going to need someone to pack up all the shit in the attic. When they go back inside, Drew has compliments for the accommodations and asks if Jen is going to the big seniors party tonight. Jen assumes he is asking because he wants a ride. Clip three.
I was wondering if I could interest you in a little recreational detour first.
Oh, no.
Oh, no.
That's always the correct response to a Drew suggestion that vague.
Mm-hmm. Then we're at the party on a very cold-looking beach as Jack beckons Joey and Dawson, and we'll get to them, to greet a very bubbly Andy. She tells them they need to get to Italy immediately and check out the architecture, the men, the food, and did she mention the men? Apparently the men are a big deal. Then Jen and Drew are running with flashlights across the very well-lit lawn at school, clip 4.
I think the timer for the sprinkler system's over here.
I've got a bad feeling about this.
Right. It's quiet out. Maybe a little too quiet. Ooh, shall I add that to the list of B-movie cliches you've been spouting?
Hey, Alan Cross, you could just write a better script rather than call yourself out like this. Just a thought.
Yeah. Also, sprinkler and spouting? Give it another pass.
Yeah. Anyway, Drew finds the timer. His plan is to set the sprinklers to go off during graduation to turn a ho-hum event much more memorable, which is when they get caught by Peskin and a security guard. Then Peskin is bringing the kids back to his house, and you can see in the visual aids, but I would bet maybe up to $5 that the set they use for his house is the same one they used for the interiors of the McPhee house.
Yeah.
It's the same kind of...
Yep.
And also Miss Frecklin or whatever, Henry's...
Oh, yeah.
The debutante lady, the Henry's boss.
Right. No, I remember.
Anyway.
Constance,
sure. Yes. Peskin lists their various misdeeds over the year. Drew tries one last time to say he really, truly had nothing to do with the sailboat, to no avail. Jen asks if they're Peskin's hostages, but he brightly says no, they're his audience. And if the audience left early, the performer would be deeply offended. When he goes to the next room, Jen mutters that he's going to keep them there all night. Drew mutters back that they're going to miss the party. Peskin returns with a cello, saying, "The party's right here." He's always loved the cello, but he hasn't had a lesson in over a decade. And then he launches into some very bad celloing for the kids to make faces at, which you can see in the visual aids. Like, surely there's a way he could punish them without punishing himself. Like, he also has to listen to his bad playing. Like, make them do a chore or something.
And also, he has to physically play. Like,
right.
There is some physicality involved in the cello.
Yes, it's true. Don't you have gutters? Make them clean them, you know?
Yeah.
On their way to their seats at commencement the next day, Andy tells Jack there's something she hasn't told their friends yet. She loves Italy so much, she deferred Harvard for a year so that she could go back. Jack thinks it's the smartest thing she ever did, as long as he can come visit. She says he can if he brings his hot boyfriend. And, you know, we know why we're not going to see either of their parents, but a couple of lines explaining where they are would not hurt. Or, you know, they're still in the car. They're on their way, whatever. Like,
yeah.
And then walking up the aisle, Grams tells Jen she looks relaxed and radiant. Jen says it's what comes of 3 hours of cello music. And then thanks, Grams, by the way, for being understanding about the whole prank thing. Grams knows Peskin's taste in music, so she thinks Jen has been punished enough. And they stop by the bleachers where we see Toby sitting alone and wearing a suit to spectate, which is a bit much. Also, this is the last thing he gets to do in the episode, so way to waste David Monahan's time and make him wear a suit in this very sunny, possibly not that hot yet weather. Hard to say.
I mean, he looked great, but also I just don't buy it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the entire sort of population of the grad scenes was casual in the extreme, I would say.
Yeah.
Elliptical. Let's go with that.
Sure. Jen would have to do a lot worse to undo how proud Grams is of her today, says Grams. And we also, by the way, know why we're not going to see Jen's parents, but rewind for earlier comments. Like, they could have said Jen told them the wrong date, so they'd show up when Jen and Grams had already moved out of the house and left no forwarding address, for example. But I guess I don't work on this show, so never mind.
They only gave a line last episode to the idea that Jen's like, "I won't take your filthy lucre to pay for college." Like,
right.
All right, we saw why that is. I would take the money anyway, but I'm a bitch like that. So, but at least give a line that was like, Helen wanted to come, but I told her, you know, you picked a side and it wasn't mine. Stay away.
Right. Yeah. I mean, take the money, especially since it seems like it doesn't obligate you to anything. You never hear from them. Just let them buy you off anyway. I'm with you.
Or let them give it to Grams, who apparently has not been getting any support from them financially for your
care. Yeah. Well, from here, they all cross into the A-plot, so we will see them there. And oh my God, here we are at the A-plot. As Dawson and Joey get close again, Pacey drifts away. We open this storyline on the lawn at school at what Principal Peskin drones is rehearsal for Capeside High's cap and gown ceremony. He calls up a very made-up Joey, winner of the Pinnacle Award, to give her speech with, like, I don't know why she would do it before the ceremony. It's probably going to be boring enough at the actual event. And instead of just staying on the lawn and yelling that she hasn't written it yet, she wastes all our time by walking all the way up to the podium, saying that into a microphone, and then awkwardly coming back to her friends, but whatever. At the lectern, Peskin has a warning for anyone considering a prank at commencement. Clip 5.
I can assure you that security will be tighter than Ricky Martin's pants.
What?
All right.
I enjoyed
back
the one
in
very
principal.
Quiet.
Principal.
What? Yeah.
Principal.
Peskin's about to launch into some more housekeeping when we see Pacey running up, and so does Mitch in his new short hair. When Mitch intercepts Pacey, Pacey starts babbling excuses for his lateness, but clip 6.
It's not about you being late, Pacey. I wish it was.
That sounds vaguely ominous. What is this about?
It's about your grades.
And what about my grades?
Well, you're right on the bubble of being able to graduate.
Don't tell me that, man. I have sacrificed my entire senior year for this, okay? I pulled double class loads. I've done everything that you people asked me to do.
I know you've worked hard. I do, and it's not over yet. Okay, now how well you do on your final exam will determine if you can graduate. Principal Peskin insists that you spend your time studying rather than attend a rehearsal.
What, so you're kicking me out? Okay, please don't do this to me here, Miss Hillary. I'm really under a microscope right now. Please.
I'm sorry, Pacey. Believe me, it's not my decision. You should go.
Fine.
Okay, I've had many, many, many complaints in the past about Pacey, the D-minus bumbler. Mm-hmm. Those complaints will not end today.
Right.
There are two problems here. The first is that none of this is how grades or graduation or being a senior works in life. Like, all of this is settled fucking law by the time you're fixing to walk. Mm-hmm. So this is dumb. He would not still have an exam to take. All right, that's A. Actually, there's three problems. B, what exactly is his status and why wasn't this just made clear the way, I can't believe I'm about to say this, Beverly Hills 90210 elegantly did it by just being like, David Silver wants to graduate early. Just
right.
Like, drop the line in there, figure out what that means, and then you can reverse engineer the drama from there. Mm-hmm. But the third and main problem is that the show cannot decide whether it wants Pacey to be the white knight or the misunderstood bumbler who's not school smart, but is heart smart or mm-hmm. whatever the fuck. Like,
yeah.
This bumbling, I don't pay attention shit has never played.
Yeah.
And then you're trying to be like, oh, I've been trying to make this up all year. Make what up is A, B,
yeah.
He didn't see that.
Nope.
Why is any of this happening? It's so dumb. It makes no sense. Mm-hmm. Character assassination. I hate it.
You said in the last episode, it's just so many moving chess pieces around where it's like, it would not have been hard to see this through the season. Like, you certainly had the arc of where it was going at the start, I would assume. Like, you at least had an mm-hmm. outline without the specifics in the way, like, just drop it in every third episode. How's your grade 11 chemistry going or whatever the fuck?
Yeah. Shouldn't you be studying for junior bio
right.
instead of doing whatever activity is at the center of this episode?
Right.
There may have been like scheduling conflicts. People were off shooting movies. Like, I don't know the situation, but by season 4 of mm-hmm. this shit, you should be able to set this up. Adding to all of this, that this is supposed to be the catalyst for him burning Joey to the ground in front of all their classmates.
Right.
And I don't buy it. Like, there was absolutely no setup. Even for this show, it is really short cutsy, and I hate it.
Yep. So Pacey is trudging home when he sees that Doug has parked in his path. They snark at each other, including a gay joke I don't need to repeat, until Doug sincerely asks Pacey how school is going, and Pacey tells him about the strong possibility that he's not going to graduate. So Doug can go tell their parents Pacey is living down to expectations and cancel that big grad party they were probably planning. Sarcasm. When Doug finds out Pacey won't know if he's graduating until after Mr. Kasdan's English final, Doug offers to help him study. Pacey bitterly tells him to do something more useful at this time, like solve a murder. Doug is serious, and Pacey is as well. He doesn't know why they won't just wave him through, since everyone will be happier as soon as he's done with high school, which, like, you know, kind of true. Like, no one does want him back. At this point, who cares? It's not like they're waving him through to college, you know?
Yeah.
Also, again, this boy is clinically depressed. Someone insists on helping him, even if he turns you down. This is all very textbook, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
In the hall at school, Joey mopes to Dawson that she can't get her speech written and thinks she has some kind of block. Dawson speculates that said block has a name, which is Pacey. They compare notes on how far down Pacey has spiraled and that he clearly needs help but won't accept it. Joey thinks that just because she and Pacey broke up, it shouldn't mean they can't be friends again. And Dawson's like, well, but then says she should still try to tell Pacey that she cares about him. And then it's time for Mr. Kasdan's final. Pacey gets to his seat just in time for Mr. Kasdan to set the test in front of him. But when he goes to write his name, he breaks his pencil tip and politely asks Mr. Kasdan to lend him one. Clip 7.
Still as unprepared as the day you started this class, eh, Mr. Witter? It's nice to know, though, that in this ever-changing world, I can still count on your remarkable consistency.
Well, I sure deserve that one. Good joke, Mr. Kasdan. Stupid old me.
Pacey, it was just...
No. I was agreeing with you. I mean, I got it, right? It was about me being stupid. How I'm some lame know-nothing student who's just slowing down everyone around me.
He did not say stupid. He said predictable, which you are, and which this meltdown also is, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not over. Clip 8.
You know what really kills me about you people? I show up to class with a broken pencil, okay? Now you assume that that means that I don't care, when the reality of the matter is I've been busting my ass in your class for the last 5 months just to keep my head above water so that I could graduate from this place. So if you ask me, you're the one who doesn't care. It's none of the teachers here care. I mean, for the honor students, you're willing to bend over backwards, but for me, a student who could actually use that help, you can't wait to get rid of me.
All right, that's enough. Look, I have tolerated this outburst of yours because I know you need to pass this test, but you are this close to throwing away an opportunity, young man.
You know, maybe you are right. I must be an idiot because I cannot for the life of me figure out why I try so damn hard for you. I mean, I don't know why I bother at all.
Are we supposed to care about this? We have seen absolutely zero lead up to any of this. And Kasdan is sophomore English, and it's out of character for Kasdan. Like, guys, I know everybody has senioritis in that writer's room. Fucking pull it together.
I mean, Kasdan was teaching Drew and Joey earlier in the season.
Oh, okay.
They had two gentlemen of Verona with him. So I think he's senior and junior, and that's why Pacey still has this exam this late.
I don't know
why I'm making excuses for them, honestly, but what we're going to see later from Mr. Kasdan, like, does not align with what we're seeing here, unless it's sort of like, well, I thought he could take a joke. I thought we were joking in our usual way. And for whatever reason today, Pacey decided to be a huge bitch about it.
Yeah. Or there were a bunch of scenes that established anything in this section of the plot that got cut.
Right. Anyway. I also suspect this was supposed to be a Dylan McKay moment, because then we get this as Pacey is stalking out. Clip 9. Right?
Yeah. Barry, I'm going to go work Shadowcaster.
Yes! It's totally like Brandon or Dylan just made a really fiery point and is stomping out of the scene on it.
Mm-hmm. In his pale dungarees.
Yes. Anyway, Pacey, calm down. This man is not your dad, okay? Ultimately, what this all boils down to, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Then Joey is at the Just Pacey house, where she finds him on the porch, I think practicing tying sailing knots. He is fairly friendly at first until she says she heard what happened in Mr. Kasdan's class, and he asks not to talk about that today. Clip 10.
Could you at least tell me what you're going to do?
I tell you what I'm not going to do, namely graduate.
Look, Pace, I'm sure there's probably time to talk to somebody. I mean, you could go to Mitch, you could go to Peskin. I mean, there's got to be something we could do.
Oh, I'm sorry, we? I didn't realize that we were involved in a team sport here, Joey. I don't think there is a we anymore.
Well, do you or don't you want there to be, bitch? Because you dumped her. She's trying to help you.
Yeah.
But also, shut up, Joey. Or have you somehow still not learned your lesson about getting his hopes up about stuff like this?
I think the wiser play might have been, as the Pinnacle Award winner, you have much better access to Peskin and Mitch. Row down the creek and ask Mitch to intercede.
Yeah. Anyway, there's more. Clip 11.
I know it's over. I just want to be your friend. I want to help you.
You want to know what the truth is, Joe? I still love you. And I probably will love you for a very long time. But I can't just be your buddy. Because as much as I enjoy the concept of being just friends, in reality, it's a bizarre form of torture, and I'm just not willing to participate in it. So right now, what I want to do is just move on and get over you. And the only way for me to do that is to not be around you anymore.
I guess. I don't know.
Fair. This is what I would have said in my advice column. Like, just get through grad and don't be around each other for 90 days. But in this case, the breakup is so fucking contrived that it's like, just get back together. Why not?
Yeah.
Well, I guess somebody had to shoot a movie is why not.
Yes. I understand this is a depression talking. He's not being rational. Joey asks if Pacey doesn't see a time when they might ever be friends again. He doesn't want to think about the future. Joey lets out one rueful chuckle and says she should go. Pacey says he knows coming over couldn't have been easy for her, and she cuts him off to say nothing seems easy anymore.
Not the only person who's depressed, are you, Pacey?
Seriously. Then Joey is back home, weirdly, still in her jean jacket, inside at the kitchen table. She is trying and failing to write her speech when Bessie comes in. After Joey briefly catches her up on her bad interaction with Pacey just now and how blocked she is with her speech, Bessie says she may have some inspiration. A letter their poor dead mother wrote when she was just their poor dying mother for Bessie to give Joey at her high school graduation. Joey stares at it so long, Bessie has to ask if she's going to open it. Joey's not up to it right now, so Bessie tries not to seem too disappointed as she gives Joey privacy. And of course, when we see Joey next, she's in Dawson's bedroom doorway with the letter, asking him to read it to her because they didn't want to hire an actress to read it in the voice of Joey's poor dead mom. Just kidding.
Mm-hmm.
Because she wrote it a few days before she died, and Joey remembers what she was like back then when she was in so much pain. Dawson would be honored to read the letter to Joey, and it starts like this, clip 12.
My darling Joey, I know if you're reading these words, it means you've graduated from high school.
Putting it that way makes it seem like there's another letter in case Joey didn't graduate. It's like, dear loser, what a disappointment you turned out to be.
America, we've lost the astronauts.
Anyway, back to it. Clip 13.
Congratulations, sweetheart. You didn't have a lot growing up. You'll even have been shortchanged one mother. Still, I want you to be proud of your family. If our strife has caused you pain, remember, it also makes you strong. Bessie is strong, and I'm sure she's taken good care of you. Of all the things my illness has robbed me of, I count the greatest of them watching you grow up. You're barely 13 now, still a young girl. And so I'm left to imagine the woman you've become. Strikingly beautiful, I'm sure, and equally unaware of it.
So this is where we find out Joey's poor dead mother was a male screenwriter.
I mean,
such a cliche. Wow.
Yeah. And she talked and wrote the same way that all the characters do. So, I mean, I don't know what I expected, but fortunately, I was distracted by a really splendid reacting long shot of Katie Holmes during this, where she just kills it in the scene. She's so good.
She does. There is more. Clip 14.
Quick-witted and strong-willed. Possessing the deep, soulful eyes of an artist and the shy smile regularly betrays the tough facade you do your best to keep up. If any of this sounds remarkably on the nose, it's because it's the girl you always were, Joey. And it's the woman you'll always be. Whatever you decide to do with your life, I know your future will be luminous. Wherever you decide to go when you leave, remember your days in Capeside fondly. And keep close those who shared your childhood. They will always love you in a way no one else can. And they will always be with you. Just as I love you and will always be with you. Love, Mom.
One less flutal to send off season four.
I mean, yeah, look, this was corny, but it was well done by the actors. I thought there was sort of a leave-taking happening among all the cast, parallel to things in the episode. Vanderbeek did a good job with it, but yeah, Katie Holmes just absolutely destroyed that scene, trying not to cry. And then the two perfect tears cutting tracks through her too much makeup, which poor kid. But yeah, it was nice work from them.
There is certainly a gif in the visual aids of her blinking away her two perfect tears. And then a long shot where we see she's gotten some new ugly boots. So that's nice.
Yeah.
While almost everyone else is enjoying the graduation party on the freezing cold beach, Pacey is at home to open the door to Mr. Kasdan. After warily asking Pacey to let him inside, Mr. Kasdan asks if Pacey studied for that test. Pacey studied his ass off, he says. Mr. Kasdan pulls a copy of the test out and asks if Pacey wants to prove it. Clip 15.
You did hear everything that I had to say in class today, didn't you?
Oh, I did. You're not an idiot or a punchline. You are why I teach. Those honor students that turn your stomach, they don't need me. They're gonna forget me as soon as they walk out the door. But you.
I have a funny feeling I'm gonna be telling this story for years to come.
And if that should turn out to be the case, please describe me as a strapping, handsome man possessed of an immense charity and a great, great goodwill.
I can do that.
Mr. Witter, you have 45 minutes.
Sorry, was that speech from the teacher, "Stupid babies need the most love"?
Basically.
God betrays Witters and children. I don't even know.
And yet he hasn't been getting it. Like, this would have been such a nice story for Pacey. It would have broken up all of the agita with him and Joey if we had seen him have this kind of relationship with Mr. Kasdan all season. I mean, it wouldn't have gotten them to the ending they wanted, but like, you could come up with any other thing than this like half-assed school crisis that sort of like happened, just flared up at the beginning and the end of the season. Like, come up with another bullshit reason for Pacey to dump Joey if that's where you need it to go. Because this doesn't make sense. If Pacey is the reason he teaches, then why has Pacey felt this neglected all year, apparently?
And also, let us remember that in season two, Pacey spat in the face of one of Kasdan's colleagues and took a suspension.
Yeah.
He also fucked or was assaulted by, let's be real, a colleague in season one. But leaving that aside, also in season two, Andy like doubled his GPA in like 3 weeks. This is possible, and the whole school would know that because it is not a big school, as we're about to see on the lawn. Like, it's so frustrating. And both of these actors would have been completely capable. This would definitely, like, you're right, there was a Dylan and Kelly, like, now that you're able to be together, you've started to hate each other vibe.
Yeah.
Happening, like, give him something else to do.
Yeah. Back to the party where Andy is telling Dawson she heard about him and Gretchen and she's sorry. And I would love to have a sense of how much anyone was keeping in touch with Andy since she was already gone by the time Gretchen and Dawson got together. But oh well. Dawson says he's doing okay with it and has no regrets. Joey was his first love, shut up. But Gretchen was his first mature relationship, which let him know he was capable of loving somebody. Andy wistfully says she wishes she were someone's ex they look back on fondly, and Dawson says he's pretty sure she is. And sure enough, here comes Pacey, taking a few steps into the party, seeing Joey having fun with Jack and Toby, and then turning back around again, like, did you think she wouldn't come? If he had seen her having a bad time, would he have stayed? But whatever, he's walking out.
Yeah.
When Andy runs out after him and he's stunned and then delighted to see him, and their hug is extremely cute. Every time you see Joshua Jackson in character hugging someone, you can tell he's real good at hugging.
Yeah. And that they were really glad to see each other.
Yeah.
They were a cute couple.
They were. So when we rejoin them, Andy's telling Pacey how sorry she is that things didn't work out with him and Joey. He claims he's okay, and what he really wants to talk about is what it's like out there in the world. At first, she didn't know anyone, but then she made a bunch of friends. It made her realize leaving Capeside wasn't an end. It was a beginning. And that's when Pacey is moved to tell her about the job offer, which, despite his dismay when he first heard it, he's now very excited about, judging by his huge smile. He also wants Andy to be the first to know he passed his last exam and he will be graduating tomorrow. She knew he could, which he says put her one up on him. She asks why he hasn't told the rest of their friends, since they're dying to know. But Pacey doesn't need to tell them or to compare himself to them anymore. Another thread that didn't really go anywhere or like flared up occasionally and then got dropped.
Was never and always seemed to come out of nowhere. Like the family problems, sure, but this whole like, I suck compared to you guys. Like, that's not the Pacey that we met.
No.
In the beginning. Pretty confident, just scattered and Pacey-ish.
Yes. But he says he did it all for himself and he wants to feel good about it. He can't wait to go feel the sun on his face and know for the first time in his life he can overcome anything. He wanted to tell only Andy, since she was the first person who ever told him he could be more than he was. So he guesses that's thank you for her. She says he's welcome, and they have another hard hug on it. And at some point after Andy's peeled off, Pacey wanders into a screen porch where Joey's sitting alone. They lock eyes, and as he comes toward her, she gets up and says she's glad he made it. He is too. It was a nice party, and they go on. Clip 16.
I was thinking about tomorrow.
What about this tomorrow, Land? Does it look even remotely bright?
Certainly didn't when it held the prospect of never seeing you again.
How is that any different from the here and now?
Calm down, Alan Cross. What's your problem? Stop overwriting.
Oh my God.
Really egregious. Like,
is everyone but Joey getting put on an ice floe? Like, yeah. Is this like a Shirley Jackson story where it's like, you've graduated from living? Like,
yeah.
Oh my God, everyone calm down.
How many times do we have to say it? She's going an hour away.
Yeah.
You have a car. You could see her daily if you wanted. It's not far.
Yeah. Or just fucking move to Boston yourself, like, since you don't have specific college plans.
Mm-hmm.
The other thing is, like, I don't know, there's like a billion colleges in Boston and surrounding areas. Pick a nice JC, figure out what you want to do.
Yeah. Anyway, they go on. Clip 17.
I think I should probably go off and live my own life for a little while. Well, that certainly doesn't mean that this is how I wanted it to end between us.
Yeah, you said.
So hypothetically speaking, if I were lucky enough one day to find myself owning a sailboat again, and I were to ask the woman that I love to go sailing with me, would she?
I don't know her.
See
you, Joy. She's real forgiving, I'll say. I mean, he's cute, but like, he burned her to the ground, as someone I know once said, or said five times.
Look, she does seem aware, to the extent that the show is able to convey this, that he is operating from a place of diagnosable depression.
Yeah.
But still, like, you need to go see someone in his family or someone in high school admin, be like, look, our boy's flailing, but I can't.
Mm-hmm.
And she shouldn't have to.
No.
Burnt to the ground at Al.
Yeah. Everyone has email. Email Gretchen. Then it's graduation day. Chairs and bleachers have been set up on the lawn. Pacey is sitting alone, stretched out over four chairs, smiling and sunning himself, not in a cap or gown, but definitely looking dressed for a flight to Miami, which is where Mr. Kublik's boat is sailing from. And then Bessie and Joey are bustling out of the B&B, Joey babbling about where she's supposed to be when and that she doesn't want to be late. Bessie gets Joey to hold still for a second so Bessie can put lipstick on her like before her first date with Dawson in the season two premiere. The moment might land better if Joey wasn't wearing all the makeup on the rest of her face, but they did score the scene to Jan Arden's Good Mother, so fine. Bessie is that.
Mm-hmm.
Bessie hesitantly asks whether Joey ever got around to reading the letter from their poor dead mom. Joey just says she did, and I guess if we think audiobooks are count as reading, she did, technically. Uh-huh. Bessie says she doesn't want to be nosy, which clearly she does. But Joey says if she told Bessie what it said, they'd both start crying. All Bessie needs to know is that their poor dead mom was right. Bessie did do a great job taking care of Joey. Clip 18.
Joey, you're sweet, but really, it's not fair. You deserved a mom. Bessie, I got two.
And you said you didn't want us to start crying. I love you.
Oh, I love you both.
I love you too, and I'm glad to see Joey can be grateful once in a fucking while, because Bessie deserves that. Overdue.
Yeah, good job, Bessie.
Over to the Leary house, where Gail is fussing with Dawson's gown. After some corny joking about Lily being in either Gail's or Dawson's situation soon, or both, but ideally not at the same time, Mitch very formally presents a square box to Dawson. It's a Chanel wristwatch with, "If you will it, it is no dream," engraved on the back. It's a quote from Theodore Herzl. Mitch says that when he tells people what Dawson wants to do with his life, they say Dawson's going to get eaten alive. And Mitch tells them they don't know his son. And meanwhile, Mary Margaret Humes looks like she's having no problem summoning tears for the scene, which is also very
cute.
Dawson thanks Gail and Mitch for always believing in him and says he loves them. And there's a group hug I hope did not last much longer than what we saw because the baby's in the middle of it. She needs to breathe.
I know. Poor Lillian Jr.
Then we're at Pacey's as he folds his laundry and establishes with his visitor, Doug, that he has made arrangements to store his stuff at Doug's while he's gone. And I hope for Doug to close up the place since Pacey won't be there in a month when their lease runs out.
Mm-hmm.
Doug is glad Pacey's getting to have another exciting summer. Pacey deserves it. Pacey snarks that Doug almost sounded like he meant it, and Doug says he did. Uh-oh, sincerity time. Clip 19.
You know, I gotta tell you, it would be an absolute shame for me to let another day like today pass without ever telling you how much I've always looked up to you as my big brother. Or mentioning the fact that I do actually think that one day you will make a girl very happy.
You mean to tell me that you've actually accepted my heterosexuality?
No, I said happy, Doug, not sexually happy.
Awful line.
The line is so bad, and also the entire this entire runner is awful, but then that line.
Yeah.
Ooh. Oh, who wrote this?
Yeah, I said happy, not satisfied, is what you were reaching for. Like, that's so clumsy. Not even Joshua Jackson can sell it. I mean, leaving aside the content, the phrasing, not good.
No.
Walking down the center aisle at graduation, Dawson tries to distract Joey from her nerves. We see at this point that her compulsive hair tucking has led her to tuck her tassel with her hair. See, this is the visual aids.
Yeah.
No one fixed it.
Nope.
Dawson jokes about what fashion Einstein came up with the cap and gown for a day when you know people are going to be taking your picture. When Joey laughs, Dawson congratulates himself for successfully distracting her and then sends her to the stage with the rest of the smart kids. And I don't know what's higher than the Pinnacle Award, because Joey's only the salutatorian. And look, Jen, I know the speech we're about to hear is nothing special, but Michelle Williams should have been told not to slouch with her arms crossed to listen to it. Like, she's sitting like she doesn't know she's on camera. You can see this in the visual aids, too.
Yeah.
Here goes. Clip 20.
I stand here before you, aware of the similarities that we share. I know that you're feeling, outside of my incredible stage fright, same things that I'm feeling. Pride and accomplishment, closure and regret, and a hopeful outlook on the future. But I don't think you need me to elaborate on those feelings. Instead, I wanted to share something personal and tell you that there are people in my life who are gone now. People I miss very much, and people who I am haunted by in different ways. But whether we're separated by death or merely distance, I know that they're still with me because I keep them in my heart. The truth is, in time, it's all that we're going to be to each other anyway. This population of memories. Some wonderful and endearing, some less so. But taken together, those memories help make us who we are and who we will be. So whether you're here with each other now or you're merely in each other's thoughts, remember each other on that road ahead. And I hope that no matter where your travels lead you in this life, you'll always take Cape Side with you. Congratulations.
Wow. The Pinnacle Award is really, really something.
We've had some pinnacle inflation, I feel. Yeah.
Oh my God. That was just, I mean, this is why you don't go to grad.
Yeah. I mean, it's all cliches. Like if you find yourself writing something that you've heard, let's say 20 times before in other speeches, like don't talk about the journey. Don't talk about the road ahead. Like this is all such banal, awful writing.
Yeah, except when it's actively incorrect on the usage level, like you can't feel closure. That's not how, I mean, closure doesn't exist. And if it did, that's not how it would work.
Yeah.
I mean, I know this didn't exist, but it really does sound like a ChatGPT prompt. Yay.
I mean, I'll give it credit for verisimilitude. It is the kind of thing that someone would write for an occasion like this, but that doesn't make it good. And if she's supposed to be an award winner of any kind who in just two episodes from now in the season 5 premiere is taking like an English composition class in college, like bad. This is a bad start.
Yeah.
Go back to drawing.
I mean, this is the version that you turn in to the headmistress, who may or may not have told you that if you tried to, quote, pull anything during the valedictory speech, that she could still not let you graduate. Mm. And then you read something else, and there is video of her react. It wasn't that bad, but it was not the version that she was cross-checking me on. And she did say, like, you know, frankly, I'm sick of your shit. You've been into college for 6 months and you've been acting like a little bitch about it ever since. Get off my campus.
Get out. But yeah.
Yeah. You know that grade you skipped? Do you want to take it again? I was like, my parents aren't paying for that. Take it up with the boss. But yeah, I mean, wow. Like, but my speech wasn't good. It was just better than this.
I mean, almost no speech is good. Let's be real. The reason any go viral, especially from graduations, is because like it's so unusual for anyone to say anything new. Mm-hmm. And that includes everyone who's getting fucking honorary doctorates. There, I said it. Katie Couric.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Oh, my God. No one wants to hear from you.
They really don't. Take it from someone who read her fucking awful memoir. Anyway, Dawson leads the standing ovation. Drew checks his watch just as the sprinklers go off and everyone squeals except Jen, who looks back knowingly at Drew. Only we see Pacey smiling as he walks into the regional airport that the production's really getting its money's worth from. And when Peskin calls Pacey's name, he is walking to the little Buddy Holly plane. I think we all hope he does not get Buddy Hollied in. And that's the episode. Let's close it up by naming our MVP. Mr. Kasdan. Wish we could have seen more of you, bro.
Yeah, he's always been pretty decent. I'm going to go with the senior generation of Cape Side. Like, you did it.
You got
these little fuckwads over the finish line one way or the other. Like, no love for Sheriff and Mrs. Witter,
no.
But everybody else, thank you for your yeoman service and Bessie, most of all. Always there with a lipstick. That's what you want.
Correct. Least valuable player.
Oh, Casey. It's not his fault, but no, it is what it is.
It's
the
true.
Writers, I guess.
Yeah. I'll say Pacey's a good one, but I'll still say Peskin, who really wasted an opportunity to get something done at his house by way of punishment. Instead of wasting his
own
time.
You don't have a single bathroom you don't want to clean? Come on.
Seriously.
Next time on Again With This, the long goodbye continues somehow as Dawson's early acceptance to USC means farewell parties, manly hugs, and a circle closing kiss. You might want to plant your lips on some Maalox before you check out our visual aids. We do them for every episode of this podcast, and you can find this rich visual text of 90s and aughts fashions at our website, againwiththispodcast.com. That is where all of our archives live as well. Come on through. I'm Cello Punishment Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Blue Sky at Sarah D. Bunting. My co-host is Helpful Lipstick Tara Ariano. She's on Blue Sky at Tara Ariano. And our producer, David T. Cole, needs to not be around us anymore. Talk to you next time.
You guys are terrible.
It's true.
True.